welcome to another program of The Face of Pro-Life. Today joining me is Susan Boyce, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Catholic bishops' response to the health care reform debate that's going on currently in Congress. Thank you so much for joining us today,
You're
Susan.
You're welcome. Basically, just quickly, there's an amendment for health care reform out there that you may or may not have heard about. I'm laughing because who hasn't heard about it? It's called H.R. 3590, Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, that's being sponsored in the Senate by Harry Reid.
So it's the most recent one that last Saturday the Senate voted to debate.
That's
so
correct.
Right now they're just debating this bill.
They're debating it. And what is very bad about this bill is that they eliminated the Stupak Amendment, which was in the House of Representatives, and it was an amendment that made federal funding of abortion, it took out federal funding of abortion from the bill. It's a better way to say it.
Right.
So it's gone, and as it currently stands, the bill, which is over 2,000 pages
the
Senate version, mandates federal funding from abortion, and in fact, it's going to collect a monthly fee from everybody enrolled in the public option that's going to go in a special treasury account set aside for the purposes of abortion.
For Planned Parenthood.
Yes, this is horrific. This is just awful, and obviously, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is deeply, deeply upset about this. So,
and they were the ones that were very instrumental in helping to propel the Stupak Amendment through the House to begin
with. Yes, they were. Now, the problem with that is that the whole bill itself, the 2,000-page monstrosity, has many mandates in it which would be anti-life.
Mm-hmm.
And abortion is just, if you could believe it, the very tip of the iceberg.
Right.
So the whole bill itself is toxic.
Right. Even with the Stupak Amendment.
Even if it had an amendment that prohibited federal funding of abortion, the bill itself would still be toxic. And the bishops, the Conference of Bishops, go on as also advocating for conscious protection for healthcare workers. But what they're not talking about in the whole monstrosity 2,000-page bill is that there's going to be rationing, which will lead to increases of euthanasia and, you know, other
negligent
care for, you know, sick people across the spectrum of ages. There's going to be a ridiculous tax burden placed on the American public, which is going to indirectly be anti-life, because if you can't feed anybody because you're paying an enormous tax to pay for mandated health insurance coverage under penalty of fine or imprisonment, then you're certainly not going to have another want to have another child. And, you know, if that happens and somebody's pressed like that, I mean, you could see how then it would be anti-life.
Right.
Or
right.
The climate would be anti-life. So basically, you know, there's a lot of other things wrong with this bill.
Mm-hmm. Now, the bishops as a whole, as a conference, have gotten together, and they, in theory, support health care reform.
Oh, they support health care reform,
and they support the bill, except that the things that they're really standing firm on is the federal funding for abortion, the conscience clause, and health care for immigrants, so that people who are in this country, no matter what, We will help them if they find themselves sick.
We want everybody who is sick to be able to have access to
So we have no problems with them. We're glad that the bishops are standing up for these principles.
I mentioned this on the last show, but it bears repeating quickly. Raymond Arroyo addressed this issue, and he was talking a little bit about how wonderful it was that they rallied together and they got the Stupak Amendment in the House.
Which is a feat in itself.
It was a very enormous and hard work. And he says, what this demonstrates is the power of the bishops' conference when it sets its mind to something. Unfortunately, they set the bar too low. They should have pushed for the full Catholic agenda on this bill. The Democratic leadership now knows how to roll the conference and how to pacify it. And he goes on to say, The bishop's other demands, conscience clauses for health care workers, coverage of immigrants, have been virtually ignored. And though nearly 50 bishops raised the issue of subsidiarity, a core tenet that we're going to talk more about, the bishops' conference made no mention of this in any of its letters or public statements. Now, that's the bishops' conference.
Right, as a whole.
Individual bishops have raised this issue. Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit later, too. And there are also no mention of the rationing mechanisms in the bill that will very likely hit the elderly as well as the poor. And he goes on to say the zeal of the staff to get a universal health care bill passed, any universal health care, overwhelmed even the cries of the bishops themselves. So the staff drove but one stake into the ground on Capitol Hill, the abortion stake. So that, in a nutshell, is why even if they had an amendment prohibiting federal funding of abortion, it wouldn't go far enough.
Right. So, and we all already know, though, too, that even though the bishops were successful in getting this amendment attached to the House bill, that doesn't mean that any final bill that will be voted upon will indeed keep the STUPAC amendment.
Right. That's a very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. And actually, the chance of, okay, even if they could find a senator to sponsor a similar
Senate bill, right,
in the Senate, the chance of the actual legislation not having federally funded mandate for abortion is almost nothing, because the Health and Human Services Secretary has the authority to issue rules and regulations, and they say 1,579 times in the legislation itself there are opportunities for her, mandates for her, not opportunities, mandates, where she has to issue rules and regulations. So you can be certain that she will, or whoever is the Health and Human Services.
And that's something that, I mean, you expect a bill to have things specifically laid out, but what you're saying is that this Human Health Secretary could just come in and say, well, it's my prerogative to do this, 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 and this, and this is what we're going to do, without anybody having any say.
That's correct.
Wow.
And, yeah.
That's big.
It is very big. And I'd like to talk about a couple of people that have addressed this, a couple of bishops that have addressed this and have actual written pastoral letters.
Oh, wow.
There are two bishops. One, actually, they're both from the Diocese of Kansas City. And they wrote an excellent pastoral letter on the whole issue. And it was so beautiful and eloquent. It starts off saying, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read key parts of it because I can't repeat their language. It's very good. He says that as Catholics, we are proud of the church's healthcare contribution to the world.
Absolutely.
Indeed, the hospital was originally an innovation of the Catholic faithful, responding our Lord's call to care for the sick. In America, currently 1 in 4 hospitals are run by a Catholic agency. So Catholic Church historically has been
led
healthcare, right? Led the whole thing, and then they go on to address inadequacies in our present system, and the bishops list 6 inadequacies. Number one, there are 47 million without medical insurance. That's a problem. Number two, the costs continue to rise, and medical spending in the U.S. at $2.2 trillion, constituting 17% of the gross domestic product and predicted to double within 10 years.
Wow.
So, that's a problem. Number three, the Medicare Trust Fund is predicted to be insolvent by 2019. Number four, mandated health insurance benefits for full-time workers have created an incentive for companies to hire part-time.
Right.
So that's a problem. Similarly, number five, the much higher cost to employers for family health coverage as compared to individual coverage places job candidates with dependents at a disadvantage.
Right.
So that's a problem.
That's huge.
Number six, finally, and not least, individuals with pre-existing conditions who most need care are often denied. So that's a big problem.
But they're big problems, but they're things that can be addressed in
a without the nuclear option of the 2,000-page bill.
Exactly.
Well, then the bishops, you know, in fairness, they talk about four strengths. And, you know, number one, we like our service, and it's considered very good in the world. Then he says, number two, it's important to remember that 85% of our citizenries have insurance.
Right. And just because you don't have insurance doesn't mean you can't get services.
And then they talk about number three, the competitive nature of our private sector is an incentive to positive innovation and in the development of technology. And number four, Medicaid and Medicare, while they have their limitations, they provide us an important safety net. Mm-hmm. So those are the advantages of our systems. Now, the bishops go on to say that change itself does not guarantee improvement. Many of the proposals which have been promoted would diminish the protection of human life and dignity and shift our health care costs and delivery to a centralized government bureaucracy.
Right.
Centralization carries the risk of a loss of personal responsibility, higher cost, and reduction in personalized care, expanded bureaucracy. And then he said, effective healthcare policies must be built on a foundation of proper moral principles.
Right.
So now this is that S word that Raymond alluded to that 50 bishops in the conference brought up. 50. Subsidiarity, and hopefully I've said it correctly. Now the principle of subsidiarity is a notion that healthcare ought to be determined at the lowest level rather than at the higher strata of society. And it has been promoted by the church as subsidiarity. Subsidiarity is the principle by which we respect the inherent dignity and freedom of the individual by never doing for others what they can do for themselves.
Right.
And thus enabling individuals to have the most possible discretion in the affairs of their lives.
Rather than the government getting involved
so
in every aspect.
So subsidiarity protects personal freedom.
And it's a tenet of the church.
It's a tenet of the church's social teaching. And then two of the Holy Fathers have gone on to talk about subsidiarity. This is really interesting. Pope John Paul II said, by intervening directly and depriving society of its responsibility, the social assistance state leads to a loss of human energies and an inordinate increase of public agencies, which are dominated more by bureaucratic ways of thinking than by concern for serving their clients, which are accompanied by an enormous increase in spending.
That is like so profound.
Isn't
I've been
it?
Saying
yeah.
this for not as eloquently,
yeah.
but
right.
I mean, you know, you want people and people in your own neighborhood to take care of you. You don't want the government to be setting up these bureaucracies, which are layers of more paperwork and more people being paid to do nothing, than in giving people the opportunity to minister to each other rather than the government doing it for you.
And our current Holy Father, Pope Benedict, wrote even something more eloquent. He said the state which would provide everything, absorbing everything into itself, would ultimately become a mere bureaucracy incapable of guaranteeing the very thing which a suffering person, every person needs, namely loving personal concern. We do not need a state which regulates and controls everything, but a state which, in accordance with the principle of subsidiarity, there's that word again, generously acknowledges and supports initiatives arising from the different social forces and combines spontaneity with closeness to those in need. In the end, the claim that just social structures would make works of charity superfluous masks a materialistic conception of man, the mistaken notion that man can live by bread alone, a conviction that demeans man and ultimately disregards all that is specifically human. And that's a Pope Benedict XVI, our Holy Father.
You know, that just brings to mind, you know, like the more government steps in and takes care of things and people, mm-hmm. the less we feel compelled to. Because if we figure, you know, well, you know, they're getting food stamps or they're getting this or that from the government, we don't need to take care of them.
Right.
And that
so
takes humanity.
It limits generosity.
Exactly. It,
the rest of us need to be charitable.
Right.
We need that everybody needs to have a sense of charity and a sense of giving and love.
And I always say this, that the states that have the highest taxes have the lowest tithing.
Yeah.
So that the states like Alabama and Mississippi, the people have like the lowest income, but they have low taxes and they give more of themselves than people in Connecticut who have a high income but high taxes.
Yeah, exactly,
because we feel that the government's already doing it. Why should we get involved in Catholic Charities
and
when the government's doing it already?
It crushes your spirit.
Yeah.
It's a spirit-crushing kind of thing. Now, they go on in this pastoral letter that they issued to talk about some of the other important moral teachings that one needs to include in any consideration of any kind of universal health care. And they also talk about Bishop Walter Nicholas of the Catholic Diocese of Sioux City, Iowa. He commented on the dangers inherent in the establishment of a health care monopoly, drawing a comparison to the experience of HMO plans in our countries, where individuals entrusted with keeping the cost of health care at a minimum may refuse to authorize helpful or necessary treatment for their clients.
Right. This would be the ultimate HMO.
Right.
Because it's only one.
Right. Then he talked about, the bishops go on to talk about our moral obligation to act for the common good, which is it's the other side. It's another Catholic principle of solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, it is very clear that we must find some way to provide a safety net for people in need without diminishing personal responsibility or creating an inordinately bureaucratic structure which will become vulnerable to financial abuse by crippling our national economy and removing a sense of humanity from it. But he says the church clearly advocates authentic reform which addresses this obligation, but while respecting the fundamental dignity of persons and not undermining the stability of future generations, because the current bill, the taxation load is so great, future generations will be...
Well, we'll be owned by China.
We'll be owned by China, yep. And so then he talks about the principle of solidarity. The principle of human solidarity is a particular application of Christ's love, command to love your neighbor by itself. It's an application of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. I'll talk about that a little bit more later in more detail. But I'd just like to get through what the Kansas City bishops wrote. And they said, just in conclusion, the last two principles, solidarity and the promotion of common good, cause us to say that we cannot be passive concerning health care policy.
No, absolutely not.
So there's a problem. It needs to be fixed.
Right.
Everybody agrees on that. There's important work to be done, but change for change's sake. Change which expands the reach of government beyond its competence would do more harm than good.
Absolutely.
Now, this was reiterated by Raymond Arroyo in that first piece that I read. Change which loses sight of man's transcendent dignity or the irreplaceable value of human life, change which would diminish the role of those in need as agents of their own care, is not truly human progress at all.
Yeah, you know, they're very profound.
A hasty or unprincipled change could cause us, in fact, to lose some of the significant benefits that Americans now enjoy while creating a future tax burden which is both unjust and unsustainable.
Yeah.
So they address all of these issues. These are, some of our individual bishops speaking out against the entire package,
right?
Not just
saying the little pieces,
the tip of the iceberg, which is the abortion funding. So it's really interesting. This was another interesting article to that point, talking about an observation. What the bishops, this is referring to the conference,
mm-hmm,
again, not necessarily individual bishops, but what the bishops seem to miss is that the goal of every human being having access to medical care should not necessarily be tied to the government.
Right.
And that's what the Kansas City bishops were talking about. I've always maintained that it's the responsibility of individuals in the church, as well as charitable and religious organizations, to support those who are in need. Government has always been a corrupt, ineffective organization that dehumanizes people. The goal of healthcare access to those in need should be fulfilled by the church, not by the federal government through taxation.
That is so true, because, you know, that gives us the opportunity to live our faith.
Right.
Is by supporting our hospitals and in them in turn, you know, supporting people who are in need and who are sick.
Absolutely. This is really interesting. This is something that confuses a lot of people, and perhaps where the main confusion is coming from. Catholic social thought includes two seemingly contradictory yet complementary principles. And just for reference here, I got this from a blog called Access of Right, it's just, you know, to give credit to the author.
Right.
He says the principle of subsidiarity and the principle of solidarity seem to be contradictory, and many Catholics who tend to support liberal policies always remember
solidarity,
but don't really like the little subsidiarity part, which suggests that, you know, whoa, we need to pull back, we need to allow individuals to do for themselves,
right,
instead of looking to the government for all of our answers. So that was pretty much the main pertinent point out of that article. Another person who has been very eloquent in subsidiarity and that government isn't the solution for our problem of healthcare reform,
or pretty much anything,
right? that's pretty good. Is Monsignor Ignacio Barrerio, and I apologize if I have mispronounced his name. He's the executive director of the Rome Office of Human Life International.
Oh, wow.
And he has a doctorate degree in systemic theology, among other degrees.
Yeah.
But he wrote a really, really interesting article about entitled American Healthcare Reform, A Good End Does Not Justify Evil Means.
Right.
And talking about subsidiarity, and he quotes a lot of the same papal encyclicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some quotes from him that are pretty interesting. He said that a serious concern shared by most persons who are aware of the U.S. healthcare system's problems is the continuing massive increase in the cost.
Yeah. And any of the bills that have come through just heap on more costs.
The constant growth of the deficit makes it very unlikely that a central government will reduce those costs.
Yeah.
More so, what is likely to happen is that the establishment of proposed reform national health care system will instead expand the cost of the system through a bloated bureaucracy that will actively promote a materialistic anti-life theology.
Right.
And we said in the other show that the current bill allows for the creation of 70 new government agencies with thousands of new bureaucrats being added. So that's an example. I mean,
how is that going to save costs?
It's not, because all those people need to be paid.
Right.
So.
And then they'll get government health insurance,
not public option. The establishment of this healthcare system will be an attack of the organic principle of subsidiarity. Ooh, there's that word again. Instead, Americans need to design and develop all sorts of initiatives, first at a local level, then at a state level, that would provide some guarantees of health care assistance to the poor and destitute. Taking into account the principle of gratuity so well developed by, Caritas in Verite, the establishment of nonprofit medical facilities and nonprofit insurance groups should be encouraged.
Right. So, but through grants and stuff like that.
And I think that's some of the stuff that you're talking about. You know, there's a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but there are some instances where individual employers or individual corporations will sponsor, you know, donate money mm-hmm. for healthcare. And as you said, if there's a tax burden on them, they're less likely to do that, or probably they won't be able to.
Right, or encourage, you know, doctors to have co-ops for, you know, people who can't afford health insurance, you know, and therefore, you know, medical care.
I just would like to sum it up. He said, last but not least, the cost of the system has to be taken into account. The tax burden upon American citizens shouldn't be increased. It paves the way towards despotism. It damages the economy. It paves the way towards despotism because personal freedom, the establishment of a family patrimony, would be eroded by overtaxation. It damages the economy by killing economic incentive and by eliminating disposable income. So basically, support of the whole legislation is bad.
Right. It's anti-Catholic.
Yes. And it would be really wonderful if our bishops, if the conference of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops would reverse any and all support of the entire legislation and not just go for
right.
one little piece of the tip of the iceberg,
yeah.
which is, you know, an amendment prohibiting federal funding yeah. of abortion.
Well, I think they're very naive in the idea mm-hmm. that we all support healthcare reform. There's no question, and I'm proud that they're, you know, supportive of healthcare
yes,
reform.
Absolutely.
And I'm also proud that they took a stand on three very egregious issues. You know, the idea of forcing people to perform abortions, forcing us to pay for the abortions, and we really need to make sure that everybody has access to healthcare. I think they were just naive in the idea that there were other things that were going to be heaped in this bill that would be against Catholic social teaching. And I think they were trying to be supportive of what they thought was, you know, something beneficial for the country and,
right.
and its citizens. And they did, you know, want to make sure that there were safeguards in place for obvious issues against Catholic teaching. They just didn't understand, I don't think,
the full ramifications of the bill and the full, you know, it's very serious if implemented, all the changes that will come down.
Right, right.
And, you know, unfortunately, once it passes, it's going to be very hard to stop.
Right, because we're going to have the full support of the media, you know, pushing it and
right.
supporting it.
So we hope and pray that more bishops and the whole council will come out against support
right.
of this legislation and perhaps help help pro-life senators draft a better response.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you have the courage to call your legislators and tell them that we do not want this humongous overhaul of healthcare, but we do want certain assurances for everybody to get good access to healthcare without all this government bureaucracy. We want you to look in the mirror the next time and realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.